God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Businessman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to the Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Well, George Soros just dropped $60 million in the Democrats' war chest, second biggest donation of the 2024 race to back ultra-progressive candidates and causes. It's according to the Daily Mail. The mayor of Liverpool has converted to Islam. He is one of many millions of Europeans embracing the continent's fastest growing and soon to be largest religion. You got Amir Khan over in London. It's been taken, right? UK is gone. It's a lost cause. You're not going to get there. Go there. You're going to have hummus when you go to London. You're not going to get fish and chips and a pint of beer. Just have a few things I wanted to talk about before we get into some meat and potatoes. I mean, Mayorkas, they did what we predicted yesterday, right? Mayorkas. They dismissed it without even hearing the case. Why? Because they had Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, the two best attorneys, both of whom were going to be up, were under serious consideration to be a SCOTA, a Supreme Court justice. And they are, they were going to open up a can of whoop on Mayorkas. And the public was going to get to know. So for the first time in 250 years, or somewhere like that, the Senate decided that they weren't going to have a trial. And that just keeps on going. Like, it says here, that meet Dr. Teddy Goetz, the lead editor behind the American Pediatric Association's next new textbook, Gender-Affirming Psychiatric Care. Goetz is the first-year psychiatrist at the University of Pennsylvania whose pronouns are as non-binary, trans, queer, neurodivergent, chronically ill, and a Jewish person. This new textbook is being pushed as the standard for treating transgender children, and over 7,000 pediatricians have called for it to be removed. The book says you must affirm any child who says they're transgender, and parents must be told that gender-affirming care is the only option. When do we start allowing the mentally ill to write our medical textbooks? It's insane, right? It's insane. On Capitol Hill, there was a lot of testimony this week. We had a lot. We shared a lot yesterday. We're probably going to have to share a lot today, unfortunately, because I'd rather talk about the issues. Instead, we're having to play audio clips of different, bits and pieces of things. Here's powerful testimony from Harmeet Dhillon. COVID scam and tyranny House Judiciary GOP writes, under the guise of the pandemic, the government closed schools and houses of worship, destroyed small businesses, and criminalized speech. Powerful testimony in today's hearing. So, this is Harmeet Dhillon. Let's take a listen to this. This was actually quite powerful. And if we don't start with the audio, we probably won't get to all the audio I want to share. So let's start with this one. This is really powerful.
Roy, Ranking Member Scanlon, and members of this committee, thank you for inviting me to testify before you on a topic that I believe to be the most significant civil rights crisis of my lifetime. The use of so-called COVID emergency to eviscerate Americans' most cherished constitutionally protected freedoms. During the pandemic, we witnessed the radical dismantling of the guardrails that the framers of our Constitution specifically designed to rein in imperious government actors. In the guise of emergency, government officials instituted unlimited executive fiats to control and curtail every aspect of our lives. These actions by the government were not narrowly tailored nor based on credible science, and as such, the government's escalating and often arbitrary restrictions were not meaningfully limited. The government closed our schools, locked down our houses of worship, destroyed our small businesses, criminalized our free speech, banned travel, kept us from our loved ones at their most desperate hours, even shut down the beaches of Orange County and the skate parks so that children could not play. The government wrested unchecked and unprecedented control from the American people and the vast majority of American elected officials from both parties. Assume their heretofore unimaginable powers with no qualms about history, precedent, or the consequences. Thankfully, due to a wave of legal challenges against these restrictions, the Supreme Court eventually issued rulings that, piece by piece, returned some measure of protection to our threatened First Amendment rights, while others remain exposed and eroded to this day. COVID demonstrated just how vulnerable these rights are without affirmative protection from judicially unchecked government overreach. At any given time today, a state or federal government official could declare an emergency or fabricate some unfounded excuse and suspend our fundamental rights once again. Most courts will not stop them, as we have unfortunately seen. It is imperative that Congress intervene to make sure that the COVID legal history cannot and will not repeat itself. One of the most egregious violations of our First Amendment freedoms was the treatment of religious Americans as second-class citizens, as vectors of disease. From the very beginning of the pandemic, governors across the country discriminately labeled houses of worship and by extension the First Amendment as quote-unquote non-essential, while at the same time leaving their secular counterparts open for business. In my state, California, marijuana, liquor, and big box retailers were deemed essential, but God was banned. There were different rules for the elites compared to the people as well. A member of this committee, Congressman Bush, held protests on the steps of the Capitol while Nancy Pelosi barred our client, a Reverend Patrick Mahoney, from praying at the same place. The Center for American Liberty and my law firm represented several American faithful citizens in their fight to live according to their religious beliefs. In three of these cases, the United States Supreme Court agreed with us. Gish versus Newsom, South Bay United Pentecostal Church versus Newsom, and Tandon versus Newsom. We represented pastors and congregants in California who did everything they could to keep their churches' doors open safely. They offered distancing. They offered sanitization. They offered masking. But none of it was good enough for the government. This discrimination against religious Americans did not end once restrictions lifted. We currently represent three individuals who were fired from the North Carolina Symphony, where they requested religious exemptions to the vaccine mandate. All three musicians submitted exemption requests that included guarantees they would take additional social distancing and masking measures to avoid violating anybody else's rights. But this was not good enough. The symphony denied the requests and fired these musicians who remain fired to this day, even though the symphony has lifted its vaccine mandate. As a result of these discriminatory actions, these artists lost their livelihoods and the American dream. These violations of our civil rights were made possible by the lack of due process and judicial scrutiny during the pandemic. When governors invoked emergency status, many federal judges threw all three standards of scrutiny, rational basis, intermediate, and strict scrutiny, to the wind in the name of an emergency. I heard judge after judge chillingly dismiss rulings in our cases challenging government overreach. This complete disregard for a critical check was a result of an outdated Supreme Court ruling, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which hails from even before the Jim Crow era in our country and yet remains the law in this country to this day. Jacobson handed unbridled power to the government to declare when an emergency occurred and what to do about it. There was no room for judges to make their own rules based on facts, experts, and the law. Executive fiat was rubber stamped and our fundamental rights abridged. In conclusion, I urge Congress to enact legislation that limits the federal government's ability to use outdated legislation and rulings like Jacobson and others to curtail our constitutional freedoms and to apply instead modern tiered scrutiny and due process analysis developed by the courts. No emergency, especially one defined by the government, should warrant the erosion of our freedoms and a complete disregard for the judicial scrutiny the courts use to preserve them in every other instance. Thank you.
I'm proud to say we had Harmeet Dhillon on our show about a year ago. And, you know, the thing is, there was three cases she cited. They were all Newsom. And it just goes to show you COVID was a good example of what the Democrats would their utopian view of leadership is. It's total dominance and control. And it's exactly what our Constitution and our founding fathers it's exactly the reason why the founding fathers wrote what they wrote and did what they did to protect the people. That the government is of the people, for the people, and we should reconsider paying our taxes in any way that we can, and not cooperate with the FBI, and not cooperate with the Department of Justice in any way that we can to fight back against this tyranny that has taken over the wheels of Washington. There's just no doubt in my mind that also COVID was used to exploit election fraud, mail-in balloting. And Harmeet Dhillon was on the forefront of that. She could have talked a long time about that. We now learned that the J6 narrative, this National Guard captain blows up the J6 narrative. Let's take a listen to this. This happened yesterday.
I'm here today to aid the subcommittee in resolving factual errors in the official record of what happened on January 6, 2021, specifically regarding the alleged District of Columbia National Guard delayed response caused by critical presidentially appointed Senate-confirmed Pentagon senior officials. I was concerned by the events that unfolded that day on the United States Capitol. As a federal officer of the United States Secret Service and a former state trooper with the Florida Highway Patrol, my heart goes out to all law enforcement officers, sisters and brothers that held the line that day to restore public order to the chaos. I'm here today with my counsels, Lachlan McKillen and Dan Meyer of law firm Tully Rickney. The firm has advised me, beginning with my role as a confidential source to the Select Committee to investigate the January 6 attack on the United States Capitol. When my confidentiality was breached, it was Dan who intervened to ensure I was protected as a military whistleblower. First, I want to explain my role on January 6. I was assigned as aide-de-camp, the personal assistant to Major General William Walker, the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard. It was my only second day on the job. Please focus on alleged facts found in the November 16, 2021 Department of Defense Inspector General's multidisciplinary review into the D.C. National Guard response and Department of Defense's role that day. I can say unequivocally that the Inspector General's review is riddled with inaccuracies, misstatements, and perhaps false flags and narratives regarding how critical Pentagon senior officials responded when our republic was under great stress. For instance, during a conference call at 2:31 p.m. with members of United States Army, U.S. Capitol Police, Metropolitan Police Department, District of Columbia Government, and U.S. Secret Service Uniform Division, the U.S. Army's Lieutenant General Walter Piatt, Director of Army Staff, and the Army's Lieutenant General Charles Flynn, Director of Chief of Staff of Operations, were on the call. Also on was Colonel John Lubas, Executive Officer to the Secretary of the Army. The Army falsely denied that General Flynn was ever on the call. This is false and material on its face. Lieutenant Flynn was on the call and even participated in discussions. The defense inspector's review also rounds language, papering over the fact that Lieutenant General Pyatt and Lieutenant General Flynn, while on the call, discussed how they did not like the optics. That is a direct quote. And they stated it would be in their best military advice to recommend to the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, to deny the request from Command General William Walker to deploy the D.C. National Guard and aid U.S. Capitol Police in restoration of order, liberty on Capitol Hill. In addition, former Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy claims he was on a 2:31 p.m. call and spoke on that call. This is false, unless he was in the room shadowing the call and he did not speak nor identify himself. He was not on the call. He was en route to Washington, D.C. regional office at the Federal Bureau of Investigation to support that agency's concept of operations plan for January 6. He went on to claim that he called and spoke to Major General Walker at least twice, ordering the deployment of the D.C. National Guard. This is also false. At no time did General Walker take any calls, nor did we ever hear from the Secretary on any of the ongoing conference calls or the secure video teleconferencing throughout the day. This I know because I was with the Command General the entire time recording events. Throughout the day, Major General Walker told by staff officers to stand by with respect to deploying to the Capitol Hill. Only at 5:09 p.m. in the early evening, which I wrote down in my wheel book, was the D.C. Guard given order to deploy and move to the Capitol to assist Capitol Police. We arrived too late. One American laid dead with other sisters and brothers injured, including federal and local law enforcement officers. We were ready and standing by. I know if we were able to deploy immediately when General Walker made the request, the National Guard could have helped end civil disturbance and restored public order quickly. The Army National Guard motto is always ready, always there. The D.C. National Guard was ready to help and assist Capitol Police, but we were not allowed to do our job due to paralyzed decision-making by Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller and Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy. This led to federal leadership in the Pentagon. This led to a crisis in federal leadership at the Pentagon and delayed the D.C. response by 3 hours and 19 minutes. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today and articulate the fact.
Right. So shame on Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, the two Republicans, and shame on Nancy Pelosi and shame on the sham show trial related to J6. Shame on the Department of Justice for doing the wrong thing, imprisoning the J6. January 6th was an infiltration. It was not an insurrection. By any definition, it's not an insurrection. But it was an infiltration. We're starting to learn more and more about this. But yet still, Jack Smith has a case out. And the Supreme Court just recently weighed in on Trump not being on the ballot because of a so-called insurrection, of course, in Colorado and in Maine and in Michigan. So, I mean, this is like real stuff. We've already proven our case that J6 was... I know many people that were there that day. No one knew that there was an insurrection going on. People were just there to show their support for President Trump, showing that their belief that their election was riddled with fraud. And now we're finding out 4 years later about all the fraud, but it's too late. And are we going to have enough laws in place to prevent illegals from having their CPB1 as something I've been reporting for over a year? I'm probably the only one that ever says this, that they were using the CBP1 app and registering these people with Social Security, pseudo Social Security numbers. Like illegal Social Security numbers, like identifiers, that give them the option to fall into the motor voter. Their ballots are going to get generated. Their ballots are going to get mailed. Their ballots are going to get picked up by a ballot harvester. The ballot harvester is going to get paid to fill it out for a Democrat and drop it off with a mask on in droves. And they're one after the other, one case after another. The most secure election in the history of America, as some people said, was not secure at all. And we know this. We know that we're one of the few banana republics now in the world that allows for mail-in balloting. We have a U.S. Postal Service that's riddled with liberal unions and easy, inept personnel. I mean, you walk into a U.S. Postal Service, you're not getting the FedEx treatment. You're not getting the UPS treatment. They couldn't compete with a fly if they had to. But they're propped up by your tax dollars. The U.S. Postal Service sucks for the most part. And you walk in, it's like 1952 the way they operate. I mean, it's just a sham of an operation. And every last one of them is a libtard that works at the U.S. Postal Service. And they're doing the illegal deeds. That's what they're doing. Meanwhile, Mayorkas gets off scot-free. There's no trial for Mayorkas. There's a trial in every state, it seems like, for Donald Trump in New York and Georgia. I mean, in D.C., but not for Mayorkas. Meanwhile, we got this Haitian migrant, double homicide suspect, used signature Biden CBP One app to enter the U.S. Huh? Yeah, that's the New York Post wrote that. Biden, Stephen Miller writes, Biden illegally purged federal records while prosecuting Trump for legally retaining presidential records. So he sued. And Biden says he doesn't know anything about, never had a conversation about Trump's proceedings. Yet Fani Willis and her lover, Nathan Wade, have been taking private jets up to D.C. and working with the Biden team. Of course, Biden doesn't remember what he said yesterday. He was in Scranton making a fool out of himself, says his great uncle got shot down over New Guinea and was eaten by cannibals. He just made it up. There were no cannibals in the region at that time. He just made the whole story up so he could say that Trump said in Paris, suckers and losers, to people that got captured or got shot down over at Normandy. Well, that was proven to be demonstrably false. And he took a false. And the libtards that sat there and listened to Joe Biden did a hush over the crowd. Like, oh, like they just heard that for the first time. Oh, my God, he's so bad. He had to make it up, just like they made up the Russian hoax. And by the way, Eric Ciaramella is in the news again. And we're going to get to that. But O'Keefe and from Project Veritas uncovers who is really running the White House. Special advisor reveals that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are still involved behind the scenes. And there's a hidden video where they actually say that. So here it says, Matt Gaetz writes, the U.S. Department is engaged in a deliberate cover-up on the conditions of U.S. forces in Niger, leaving our troops in harm's way. Niger is a whole different ball of wax there. You may want to take a look at Niger. I've been following that story for quite some time. And it's quite disturbing. So Tucker Carlson says this. He says, why do the reddest states produce the dumbest, most liberal Republicans? Why aren't John Cornyn from Texas and Dan Crenshaw from Texas bagging groceries at Walmart? Jesse Kelly has thought about this. So he has an interview with this guy, Jesse Kelly. So Emma Robinson writes, in a fair election, Trump will beat Biden. But who is dumb enough to still believe America has fair elections? The Biden regime are communist revolutionaries. I wanted to get that term in, communist revolutionaries. That's what we're up against. They've got the CIA and FBI behind them. They control the federal government. Get prepared, get ready, and get serious. So for the first time in 225 years of impeachments, the U.S. Senate voted 51-49 to dismiss DHS Secretary Mayorkas' impeachment without a trial. So the Senate split along party lines, just dismissed the first impeachment article against Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, deeming it unconstitutional and not meeting the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. Note, all 51 Democratic senators supported the motion put forward by Senate Majority Leader Schumer. Mayorkas was accused of intentionally undermining immigration laws and misleading Congress and the public about border control efforts. Of course, everybody knows he's guilty. I loved what I heard yesterday about Marjorie Taylor Greene when we played that for you, about how he's connected with all these NGOs, sits on boards, profits from the illegal migration. That's Mayorkas. He's a corrupt son of a gun. So Biden in 2020 says, I will make sure we immediately surge to the border. In 2021, the border is secure. In 2022, the border is safe. Biden in 2023, the border is under control. Biden 2024, we need to fix the border system. It is broken. Let's take a listen to this.
We need to fix the broken border system. It is broken.
Bullshit, okay?
Flashback.
I would, in fact, make sure we immediately surge to the border. Where a nation says, if you want to flee, you should come.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Meanwhile.
So we have rescinded so many Trump immigration policies. It would take so much time to list them.
You fucking piece of shit.
Oh, whoa. You know what? I didn't know that there was curse words in there. So I paused that one. I didn't know. So sorry about that. Along party lines, the U.S. Senate has just voted to dismiss all impeachment charges against Homeland Security. It's absolutely absurd. All right, what else do I got? Oh, this is about RFK Jr.'s running mate, and then we're going to get to some other stuff. It works in Trump's advantage because only an extreme left loony would vote for this. I would never vote for such a mess of a woman. I guess Kennedy is just another whack job. Well, no, I think that there's a secret coup going on. I think the Kennedys and Trumps were friendly. And I think that they're acting this out. I actually think that this is a great thing for Trump, because with Nicole Shanahan supporting abortion on demand, radical climate advocacy and ending oil, defunding police and bail reform, Hillary Clinton, she supports that. She supports funded Ro Khanna, Pete Buttigieg, Marianne Williamson, Joe Biden, Soros-backed DAs like Goscon. The point is that she's liable to get more votes for RFK in California than any other candidate could, because of her radical liberalism. And also, you got the Palestinian wing of the Democrat Party that hates Biden because they don't think he's gone far enough in bashing Israel. So it's kind of interesting that she could help Trump win California, if that's even possible. But if it's ever going to be possible, it's going to be when JFK and this Nicole Shanahan siphons off 20% of the Biden vote to allow an end run around for Trump to succeed there. There's a lot of Republicans in California, and we know that. It was the number one in 2015-16. It was the number one state for purchasing Make America Great Again hats. They had more Republicans there. And I think if you listen to someone like Paul Preston, you'll find all kinds of proof of that. Right? I mean, it's a red state, really. It's just riddled with fraud and rigged elections. But then you got RFK from New York, so he could help Trump win New York, especially if Trump were to pick Lee Zeldin as his VP candidate. And I wrote that. I posted that on Twitter. And I said, I would not be surprised if Trump selects Lee Zeldin from Long Island to be his running mate, because Lee Zeldin tracked really well against Holcomb in the governorship race. He's well-loved. He's Jewish. Okay, so think about that. Think about how the liberals have gone with Hamas. And think about how they want to destroy Israel from the ocean to the sea, or whatever they said. So they, I think if you're Jewish, normally Jews vote 75% plus for Democrats. And now I think if they got Lee Zeldin, you can, and you have RFK in the race with Nicole Shanahan, you could literally pick up states like New York, Massachusetts, and because again, RFK would resonate well in Massachusetts and steal a lot of votes from Joe Biden. And you'd pick up states like that. So their fraud game would be centered around Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and Georgia, and possibly Texas. But then you would have to now focus on other states like New York and California, because where they don't have so much federal election fraud, they don't need it, because they would always win comfortably. They never had an apparatus in those states. So, you know, California is for congressmen and senators and local politicians. That's where the fraud is concentrated there. So I had this piece on Eric Ciaramella that I wanted to cover, and I just can't seem to find it. Let's see. But here's another one. Top military official lied about January 6 whistleblowers. Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy was among senior officials who did not tell the truth about what happened on January 6th. Of course, the FBI was lying, too. All right, so I don't have the Eric Ciaramella bit, but suffice it to say, Eric Ciaramella was the whistleblower for the Ukraine call. And it was really amazing right now that they're breaking out news on that. I'm going to see if I can still get it, but I'll get to that later. All right, so we have Chuck Schumer bragged on the Senate floor about Speaker Johnson giving Democrats everything that they want in the foreign war bill and for Ukraine. Joe Biden just announced he supports the House bill Johnson is forcing forward. Johnson is not our speaker. He is theirs. The question is, how much longer will our conference tolerate this? So while you got the Democrats voting 51 votes, 100% to break precedence historically on not having a hearing or a trial for Mayorkas, which is unprecedented in American history. You have the Republicans that can't even defund Ukraine. So naturally, there's a lot of heat coming down on Johnson, and we're going to play a little bit of that here. All right, so right here, this is Matt Gaetz, who was reluctant to get in on the Marjorie Taylor Greene bandwagon.
For hours last night and proposed different paths for the speaker that would have avoided the abject surrender represented by his strategic choice here. There's no other way to describe it. It's surrender. It's disappointing. I won't support it.
It's disappointing. It's completely detached from what our base wants, what our voters want.
The strategy is not to try. I think the strategy is to fall on his sword.
So when I asked Congressman Chip Roy about whether or not it was time for him to oust Mike Johnson from the speakership, he said that he went right up to the line, Dana, and didn't go across that line, perhaps because he needs to talk with the speaker, which is happening right now. Now, the question is, will the numbers add up to oust him from the speakership? Because Democrats, as you mentioned, could step in to save him because of what he's doing here on Ukraine. So this is a different situation than the
money
fall
when Mark
McCarthy was ousted from the speakership. But no doubt about it, Mike Johnson opening up a revolt on the far right with his conference.
Why do we have these compromised shills running the show? But here, I found the Ciaramella thing. So the agenda also called on Ciaramella to ask the Dell Ukrainian delegation what high-level cases are on the docket for prosecution, which raises suspicions in some quarters that Biden advisors were fishing for information about Shokin's plans for prosecuting Burisma oligarchs, something Hunter Biden had been asked to find out. So Real Clear Politics put this out. So it says, impeachment whistleblower was in the loop of Joe Biden, Ukraine affairs that Trump wanted probed. So Eric Ciaramella privately expressed shock, yikes, at linking U.S. aid to firing a prosecutor probing the firm paying Biden's son, but that he kept mum publicly. So was he really shocked? No, he wasn't. You know, by the way, he was protected by an attorney named Mark Zaid. Mark Zaid tweeted out March 17th of 2017, he tweets out on pretty much the day that Yates got fired, Sally Yates, that a coup has started, series of many steps, lawyers will ultimately be involved. And he ended up being Eric Ciaramella, who's, you know, a homo that went out with Sean Misko. Who's Sean Misko? Sean Misko was the chief advisor to Adam Schiff in the Ukrainian impeachment witch hunt. And there were two lovers, Sean Misko and Eric Ciaramella, worked for the National Security Council, NSC, and was embedded in the Trump administration. They were also part of the Obama administration, but they were libtards. So then they were sort of like spies inside the White House. They were ejected at some point because it was found out that they were leaking and sharing information with Schiff. And so then what happened was they were sitting in on calls, listening in, and he misrepresented the call with Zelensky, where it was congratulatory and look into the fraud, waste, and abuse. Well, that was too much. And then he mentioned CrowdStrike and some other things that were involved with Seth Rich and that murder and the DNC. I mean, you can go on. But all of this stuff we covered a lot. And again, we have such a corrupt government that it allows these. If you mentioned the name Eric Ciaramella on Facebook, you were shut down immediately. And the same was true with Twitter. They kept that under wraps. It was like you're in a third world country. I remember that. So in 2019, then National Intelligence Council analyst Eric Ciaramella touched off a political firestorm when he anonymously accused Trump of linking military aid for Ukraine to a... Well, what did Biden do in public? You're not going to get the $1 billion if you don't fire Viktor Shokin. But 4 years earlier, while working as national security analyst attached to then Vice President Joe Biden's office, Ciaramella was a close advisor when Biden threatened to cut off U.S. aid to Ukraine over the $1 billion. Yes, and Alexander Vindman was involved. All those people were involved. So they're just now getting new information that's exposing more of the truth. How is this relevant to today? It's relevant because we have a consideration for impeachment of Joe Biden and Joe Biden and his pay-to-play schemes over in Ukraine. It also was worth consideration because they're proposing $60 billion to Ukraine, and Zelensky says, if we don't get the money, we're going to lose. Well, just lose already. If you couldn't win with $150 billion, lose already. You don't get another $60 of hard-earned middle-class taxpayer dollars. Middle class is getting crushed. So there's that. So the whistleblower who sparked President Trump's first impeachment was deeply involved in the political maneuverings behind Biden family business schemes in Ukraine that Trump wanted probed. Trump wanted to actually investigate the crimes, but they don't want anything to do with it. Let's take a listen to Victor Davis Hanson on the myth that Joe Biden is a nice guy.
Yeah, you're not black. Called one of his assistants, where's my boy? He's got, we know what he said about Barack Obama. And more importantly, this is a man who just this week basically told the nation that he's going to ignore the Supreme Court and find a way to get around the Supreme Court prohibition of unilateral cancellation of student loans. And this is a president right now whose party is in the Senate, and they're violating the Constitution. They've been given a writ of impeachment, and they're supposed to schedule a hearing. And Chuck Schumer is so paranoid about this because he's got Democratic senators up in states that they're probably going to lose the election, especially they will lose the election if they do not impeach Mayorkas, but they sanction Mayorkas and what he did to the border.
They dismissed
and so they're not going to hold a trial. They're going to try to postpone it. And they've never done that before. And we haven't had never had a president who basically said, the Supreme Court got me on the first chance. I'm going to try it again. Not since FDR tried to pack the court, which they've also argued. And when you look at the whole picture, there's one party who got rid of the filibuster, who's trying to get rid of the Electoral College, who's trying to pack the court, who's trying to bring in new states. Their whole idea is process. When the system doesn't get their intended result, then they want to change the system. They're the ones who are trying to get a presidential candidate off the ballot. They're the ones using lawfare. Joe Biden knows that. Every time he says, pay your fair share, I always think, well, your son is right now facing income tax fraud. Right. Why don't you just tell him to do it before you tell the nation to do it? I think people have had it. I really do. Joe Biden is not, he wasn't a nice guy. He's not a nice person. He's very crude. He's said things that were, I think, overtly racist. They've given him a complete pass on the way that he bothers the private space of women. He says things that about himself that are completely untrue. He makes up stories about, you know, he was Greek or he was Puerto Rican or he was this and that or a truck driver or he was a great athlete and he was the first person in his family ever to go to college, which is a blatant lie. He just does it every day. And he's
he was
not
all
a sympathetic character.
It's like he went to the mall food court and picked every ethnicity and said that's how he was raised. That was the church I went to. That was my neighbor who.
Yeah, he's such a scumbag. Joe Biden, everybody hates him. That's the thing. He doesn't have the support of the people at all. And all right, so we got other stuff we're going to get to, but I made it clear that so here's Joe Biden mistaking Israel, the city of Haifa, for Hamas.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just, look what we did recently when Israel was attacked.
He's so stupid. Joe Biden, Haifa is a city in Israel. It's made it clear, don't attack Israel? What a moron. Biden gets confused when a reporter tells him, in Pennsylvania, when you drive around the area, you see a lot of Trump signs, not very many Biden signs.
When you drive around the area, you see a lot of Trump signs, not very many Biden signs. Do you feel like you're in trouble here?
Well, you haven't been driving the right places, pal.
Pal? Hey, pal. You're dumb, pal. Right? Every Democrat just voted against holding Mayorkas' impeachment trial. So, naturally, Ted Cruz was livid about that. We got one clip that's a little bit shorter that we're going to play for about Ted Cruz.
Listen, today in the Senate, we had what was supposed to be the impeachment trial of Alejandro Mayorkas. Every single Senate Democrat voted to throw the case out, not to hear any evidence. They don't want to hear about the people who are suffering with our open borders. They don't want to hear about the people who are dying. They don't want to hear about the children being abused. They don't want to hear about the women being raped. They don't want to hear about the terrorists coming into this country or the criminals who are murdering Americans every week. They don't want to hear about any of it. And every single Democrat, all of them, that means John Tester in Montana, voted to hear no evidence. He doesn't want to know about the failures of the Democrats' open borders. That means Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, Jackie Rosen in Nevada. Every one of these Democrats running right now, they want to hide from the issues. They don't want to talk about them at all. They didn't want to listen to any of the evidence because they don't care about the people here in Montana.
I'm going to play that again, okay? Because these are important Senate seats. They're up for grabs. Not only that, but he didn't mention Joe Manchin. Yes, I know Joe Manchin's not running, but his seat's vacant. So West Virginians, wake up. We're going to pick up a lot of Senate Republican seats. As a result of this,
Democrat, all of them. That means John Tester in Montana voted to hear no evidence. He doesn't want to know about the failures of the Democrats' open borders. That means Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, Jackie Rosen in Nevada. Every one of these Democrats running right now, they want to hide from the issues. They don't want to talk about them at all. They didn't want to listen to any of the evidence because they don't care about the people who are suffering.
No, they
sure
don't
care about the people in the bodegas who are facing crime. Instead, they just want to say Trump bad, Trump bad, Trump bad. That's their whole message.
Well, yeah, but it goes further than that. I think that that's because there's so much corruption. There's so much kickback and palm greasing. If they were to do an investigation, there would be Democrats and Republicans that would be exposed to some of the fraud that's going on. The biggest crime of all, he didn't even mention. And that is the slimy kickbacks that are going on from the lobby groups of the cartels. You know, looking into the where the money, the influence money is going. So Mike Lee says, today, Senate Democrats refused to do their constitutional duty. They let Mayorkas off the off for destroying our border with no trial, throwing out over two centuries of precedents and creating a new one. We will remember this next time Democrats want to remove someone from office. Well, you got to win the seats. Last month, I introduced, Mike Lee says this, legislation to stop letting violent criminals cruise around our country via the CBP One app. Democrats blocked it. How many people need to die before Congress acts? This is in response to Bill Malusian, a Haitian man charged with a double homicide in New York, first entered in the U.S. in July 2023, when he was released into the country via parole after booking an appointment on the controversial CBP One app at a port in entry in El Paso, Texas. He killed somebody. All right, this is what Mike Lee had to say.
Madam President, as wrong as the majority leader was moments ago in making this particular point of order as to Article 1 of the impeachment articles, Article 1, remember, refers to the willful defiance by Secretary Mayorkas of the law. As wrong as he was in making that as to Article 1, and he was very wrong for the reasons articulated moments ago by the senator from Texas, he is even more wrong, far more so, with respect to Article 2, because Article 2 accuses him of knowingly making false statements. This is a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 1001, a felony offense. If this is not a high crime and misdemeanor, what is? If this is not impeachable, what is? What precedent will be setting?
Senator,
we need to address this and to discuss it. We need
position.
To discuss
if the senator
it
would like
in
to
closed session. For that reason, Madam President, I move that the Senate proceed closed session to allow for deliberation on this very consequential point of order that he's just made that violates hundreds of years of Anglo-American legal precedent and understanding
the
on the question required by impeachment rule 24.
Good for Mike Lee on that one. Good for Mike Lee on that. This you got to hear. Waltz, Congressman Waltz, how much do you think the Air Force pays for this bag of bushings?
This, Mr. Secretary, is a bag of bushings. This bag of bushings, stamped out by machinists, don't need a high school diploma. It's not anything high tech about this. All of this bag is compliant with the FAA specifications. How much do you think the Air Force pays for this bag of bushings?
I don't know, Congressman.
$90,000. This is a $90,000 bag of bushings that you need for any jet turbine engine just to operate. So the exorbitant cost due to DOD only buying commercial parts from the OEMs, which is essentially sole source, is literally driving us out of business. I mean, the interest on our debt alone is now exceeding, for the first time in American history, the entire defense budget. We can't afford it anymore.
$90,000 for a bag of bushings you could buy for about $6 at Home Depot or less. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then they had a meeting also about with these military people on readiness. And here we got this other thing, NPR. We're spending money on NPR, right? Let's take a listen to the new NPR CEO, Catherine Meyer, who basically finds the First Amendment really a challenge.
The number one challenge here that we see and is, of course, the First Amendment in the United States is a fairly robust protection of rights. And that is a protection of rights both for platforms, which I actually think is very important that platforms have those rights to be able to regulate what kind of content they want on their sites. But it also means that it is a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around.
So Justin, NPR editor and whistleblower Yuri Berliner has resigned from NPR Blasts. Their new CEO, you just heard, Karen Marr, on his way out. Berliner was serving a 5-day suspension after calling out the extreme liberal bias at NPR. I am resigning from NPR, he says, a great American institution where I have worked for 25 years. I don't support calls to defund NPR, Berliner said. I respect the integrity of my colleagues and wish the NPR to thrive and do important journalism. But I cannot work in a newsroom where I am disparaged by a new CEO whose divisive views confirm the very problem at NPR I cited in my free press essay. Right. Makes sense. Here's that. Here she is here. This is crazy.
The fact of the matter is that most written knowledge today has been written by white, colonial, European, North American
sounds like
men.
Barack
and
Obama.
So one of the things that we're really focused on is how do we think about correcting the record? How do we think about writing people into history? How do we think about writing people into the present who haven't been represented in the same way? Knowledge, when we talk about knowledge for the whole world, it needs to be reflective of the whole world. And so one of the first things we do is we measure the gaps. Who is missing on Wikipedia? Women are missing. People of color are missing. People from the global south are missing. Indigenous communities are missing. The history of Black Americans is missing from Wikipedia. Then we think about who's doing this work today and how can we support them? And it's not just about, say, for throwing money at the problem. It's also about going directly to these communities and saying, what do we need to change about ourselves? You know, what about the experience of editing Wikipedia? What about the culture of Wikipedia? What about the policies of Wikipedia need to change? Because in reality, the beautiful thing about Wikipedia is it is changeable all the time. It's edited 350 times a minute. So if we want to change it, that's fully within our power. So yes, we are cursed with a record that is hugely biased throughout history. But the power to change that agency lies with every single one of us who contribute to it.
So they hired her to be CEO at NPR. I mean, think about this. She was the CEO of Wikipedia. And you couldn't get any more liberal than Wikipedia. That is supposed to be our, like, benchmark for truth. It's on Wikipedia, right? It's just crazy. Wow, this show came up really quick at the end. We covered a good bit of it. There was a lot of audio that I wanted to share. Some of them are 5-minute clips, though, that I couldn't get to. They were really powerful. But there was a lot of committee sessions yesterday, the day before, that really have made significant news, in my opinion. But the mainstream media is not covering it. That's the problem. Well, that does bring us to the end of the Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Be sure to check out MAGAPAC.org. Find out how we're advancing America First policies to make America great again. Make a donation. It does help out keeping the Scott Adams Show commercial free. So make a donation over at MAGAPAC.org. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, use Red State as your promo code over at MyPillow.com. And we'll see you next time. Grab a shovel, dig a hole a little deeper, just to bury my kids right up to there.